A 210 on approach in heavy fog doesn't make the airport. The crew of that Qantas A380 is praised by investigators. And the eFlight initiative finally produces actual flight. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, December 6th, 2010. There are going to be a lot of questions today in the media here in Salt Lake City after a light plane approaching Ogden-Hinkley Airport in heavy fog went down in a residential neighborhood last night, the fourth such incident in this neighborhood since 1989. The pilot, identified as Clayton Roop of West Haven, Utah, told rescuers he was alone in his Cessna 210, returning from Lake Powell in the southern part of the state. Residents have told local media the plane clipped power lines and went down, setting three homes on fire. Firefighters quickly got the flames put out, but at least one home suffered significant damage. The immediate area was evacuated, and about 50 people from the neighborhood reportedly spent the night in a Red Cross shelter set up at North Park Elementary School in Roy, Utah. The Salt Lake Valley typically sees about 15 days of unhealthy air quality each year between Thanksgiving and Valentine's Day, caused by temperature inversions. Yesterday was especially severe, with heavy fog producing quarter-mile visibility and a 400-foot ceiling at Ogden at the time of the accident. The National Weather Service had issued a heavy fog warning. Roop was listed in critical but stable condition last night at the University of Utah Medical Center. Rescuers say when they dragged him away from the burning wreckage of the plane, he'd suffered severe burns on his face and hands and complained of internal injuries on the right side of his body. No one on the ground was injured. The strike on the power lines interrupted electricity to a reported 1,700 homes, with more than 700 not expected to have power restored until sometime today. The flight crew of that Qantas A380 that made an emergency return to Singapore after the uncontained failure of one of its Rolls-Royce Trent 900 engines on November 4th is being praised by the Australian Transportation Safety Board for getting the plane safely down. ATSB Chief Commissioner Martin Dolan says the engine failure severed fuel and hydraulic lines, which made the airplane difficult to control and which caused its center of gravity to shift. The pilots, he said, were not able to transfer fuel to rebalance the airplane because they didn't know the extent of the damage to the fuel systems. One of the A380's tanks is located in the tail, allowing fuel to be pumped back and forth to trim CG. The engine failure happened just 15 minutes after departure. After nearly an hour preparing the plane to land and dealing with more than a dozen system errors, Dolan says the crew, which had a combined 72,000 hours of flight experience, determined that their best course of action would be to land the plane 50 tons over its maximum landing weight, but that would leave only about 300 feet of runway when they finally came to a stop. Rather than dump fuel, which could have further upset the balance of the plane, they decided to land heavy. They reportedly had about 450 feet of runway left when they finally reached a stop. The flight data recorder showed the brakes had reached about 900 degrees Celsius by that point. Sonex Aircraft reports that its eFlight Initiative proof-of-concept electric-powered YX aircraft achieved its first flight on Friday at Whitman Regional Airport in Oshkosh. The plane has been under development since 2007, although members of the eFlight team have been pursuing electric flight much longer. Sonex founder and eFlight team leader John Monette took N270DC for a short hop on runway 27, and flight envelope expansion is the next step. The plane is a standard YX kit, modified with a proprietary eFlight 72-horsepower brushless DC electric motor, controller, lithium polymer battery, the eFlight battery management system, and special instrumentation and controls. Up next on ANN, SpaceX stands ready to make history tomorrow. The least secret, top secret spacecraft ever is back home. And the shuttle program will now last into at least next spring. You're listening to Aero News.
Freedom through innovation. It's what led us to develop Cirrus Flying 2.0, the framework for a bold new take on private aviation. And as a result, the gap between the aircraft we produce and those of our competitors continues to widen. Cirrus knows where the personal aircraft industry is headed. We're already there.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for December 6th. I'm Paul Plack. The SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket stands ready for an attempted launch tomorrow from Cape Canaveral, Florida. A static test firing had to be aborted on Friday, but was completed successfully Saturday morning. The mission hopes to demonstrate the successful orbital insertion, re-entry, and ocean recovery of a Dragon spacecraft to satisfy expectations of NASA's Commercial Orbital Transportation Services initiative. The U.S. Air Force's first unmanned re-entry spacecraft landed at Vandenberg Air Force Base at 1:16 a.m. Pacific Time on Friday. Orbital Test Vehicle 1, or OTV-1, was an X-37B test plane that conducted on-orbit experiments for more than 220 days during its maiden voyage. It fired its orbital maneuver engine in low Earth orbit to perform an autonomous re-entry before landing. The Air Force says it's preparing to launch the next X-37B, OTV-2, this spring aboard an Atlas V booster. NASA's space shuttles have been called the most complex machines ever built. Perhaps it's understandable, then, that there are so many opportunities for things to go wrong that it's hard to get even the retirement flights off the ground. NASA has now pushed the last launch of Discovery back to at least February 3rd in order to provide enough time for engineers to analyze the cause of cracks in 21-foot-long U-brackets called stringers on the external fuel tank. Repairs were made and the stringers recovered with insulating foam, but temperature and strain measurements will be conducted just to make sure. February was supposed to see the last launch of Endeavour. That's now been pushed back to at least April 1st. No joke. Still ahead, ATA names leadership for its board. It's time to find the best aircraft and aviation products of 2010. And do as I say, not as I do, or else you're fired. You're listening to Aero News.
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Pipermatch.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
We're back to wrap up your Aero briefing for Monday, December 6th. I'm Paul Plack. Delta Airlines CEO Richard Anderson has been elected chairman of the Air Transport Association of America's Board of Directors, and Southwest Airlines CEO Gary Kelly has been named vice chairman. ATA is the industry trade association representing the larger U.S. airlines. Anderson succeeds United's Glenn Tilton. He and Kelly will both serve two-year terms. ATA recently named Nicholas Callio president and CEO, effective January 1st. Callio currently leads global government affairs for Citigroup, both in the United States and in the more than 100 countries in which the company does business, and previously served both President Bush's as a congressional liaison. Aero News is looking to compile our annual look back at the best aircraft and aviation products of 2010. As in the past, the categories include heroes and heartbreakers, the people and companies or organizations that either helped us or hurt us most in 2010, avionics, gadgets, various aircraft cat and class, and the overall aircraft of the year. Also, in recognition of how quickly the world is changing, you're free to suggest whole new categories. Find a link to submit your ideas at the bottom of the text version of this story, dated December 3rd, at aero-news.net. That must mean it's almost time for New Year's resolutions. And finally today, a circuit court judge in Florida has dismissed a lawsuit brought by Donald Trump, which claimed noise from traffic departing Palm Beach International Airport decreases the property values at his Mar-a-Lago club, about 2.5 miles from the airport. The South Florida Sun Sentinel newspaper reports he also tried to halt a proposed expansion at the airport, saying it constituted intentional battery on the part of the airport manager for a refusal to shift flight paths away from the historic resort. The judge sided with the county noting that the FAA controls flight paths, not the airport manager. Trump has 20 days to file an amended lawsuit, which his lawyer says he'll do. Worth noting, according to CNN.com, at least up until last year, Donald Trump was flying his personal jet into that airport weekly. That personal jet is an old-school, three-engined, 1968 Boeing 727, formerly operated by American Airlines before its conversion into a corporate ride. Boy, I'll bet that's quiet. Apparently, noise is only a problem when somebody else is making it. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves reviews his flight school's new skycatcher in the training environment and reviews his own training webinars. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts on iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.